So I'd like to begin tonight's talk with a quote from the Buddha. This is probably paraphrased. My friends, it is through the establishment of the clarity of mindfulness that you can let go of grasping after past and future, overcome attachment and grief, abandon all clinging and anxiety, and awaken an unshakable freedom of heart here and now. Very similar to the quote that I gave last night, right? Yeah. So we understand that the task is at hand. And it's all about non-grasping. Meaning not holding on, not pushing away, not rejecting. Before being conscious of this type of being, I think unfortunately much of the time we don't attend in this way. I think we don't have any idea actually how to attend in this way. And instead, what happens in our ordinary state, we continually react, judge whether we like, dislike, or can ignore what's happening around us. And that's our habitual mode. We tend also towards constant self-evaluation. And, of course, all of this that I'm describing, we're seeing in our process when we begin to look a little more closely. And maybe there's an unconscious stream of commentary towards others' actions that is also manifesting not only our own way of being, but also other people's actions. And therefore, we have a lot of expectation in relationship to other people. And this we can begin to see, too, in our relationship. And how much there may be, because of this expectation, some unsatisfaction in relationship to others' behavior. All of this becomes very well known in practice. But when people come to a meditation retreat, and for some of you it's really the first encounter actually, which I'm very happy about because it's always exciting to have people explore this precious, invaluable way of being able to see more clearly. The idea for those people, and probably for also those who have done some practice, is to be calm and peaceful. Right? That's usually why we come to a meditation retreat. We want to be calm and peaceful. And it's not rare that people, after a day or two of practice, they're quite in a shock to notice that it's exactly the reverse that is happening. Because the more we look closely, the more we see after a few days, hours even, that the meditation reveals the opposite, that between one moment to another there's an array of different experiences that manifest. And often it's a cycle that moves between agitation and restlessness and the other, which is boredom and disconnection, distraction. That's mostly what people meet. And I know that for some of you, that's exactly been the experience because you've described this. And other times it's just pain in the body and so a lot of aches. And what happens is that the result is frustration. But then we begin to notice that our mind won't stop planning. And when we begin to have a little more capacity for this quality of mindfulness, we may have just the thought, we're reminded of a friend, for example, with whom we've had an argument and we're upset at something, and then we're noticing our judgments about that situation, right? And then we can become proud because we're noticing that the judgments are present. That is exactly what is called mindfulness. So it's not a process where there's absolutely nothing of the regular type of relationship that we have in relationship to mind, to world, to other beings that is manifesting. This is the mindfulness, where suddenly we are realizing, oh, there's a judgment in my mind, but I recognize it, and I just don't need to follow that judgment. That's mindfulness. So I'm sure we've all had a moment of mindfulness, at least one. When we are mindful, we can receive our experience rather than react. And that's the whole difference. What the experience is just what it is. And we don't need to overreact about it. The mindfulness sees what is, and there's no overlay. There's no judgment about the judgment or reactivity about the reactivity. And that sounds pretty simple when you hear me say, yeah, well, that's not much. It's huge. In your own experience, this is a moment of freedom. There's a cutting line between the stream of continuity of the cycle of suffering, which we create and recreate and feed and feed and feed in that moment when there's that exact seeing for what it is, there's a cut. What's cut? The conditioning. You understand what I mean by conditioning? The habitual tendency of conditioning, which is cycle of looping into the suffering. We cut that. And that has an effect. Because if we can see that once, we can cut it again and again and again. And probably why do we come back to practice is because we really sense that deep inside. And it's not an intellectual understanding. It's an experience which has so much impact that there is a transformation manifesting. And this happens over and over and over again. This is why we say that mindfulness is liberating. Very slowly, we reckon the bigger picture. What happens there is that we're not lost in the judgment. And I'm taking judgment as an example. It could be anything else. We're just not lost in it. We're just in a state where there's more spaciousness and therefore balance to be seeing the bigger picture instead of having our eyes closed on what's causing the pain. And that is huge. It's not an easy process, for sure. It requires a lot of courage and patience to not immediately reject. And it's wonderful because you've been very willing to be with yourself and do the practice, because it does require quite a lot of effort. So tonight I'd like to talk a little bit more about working with thoughts and emotions. The Buddha summed up the practice with three trainings, you can say. And that's the Mahapadana Sutra that says, avoiding doing harmful actions, which is the practice of ethical conduct, which I talked about a little bit on the first evening, if you remember. And then there's the training of accomplishing what's good. And this we can relate to the practice of metta, kindness, compassion, generosity, all those qualities of heart and mind that we can support. The third is purifying one's own mind, which is the insight practice, the vipassana, right? And these combine all three are kind of pillars that if one's not there, then there's a missing piece. It's just like a chair, right? So we really work on these three levels. Tomorrow I'll be talking a little more of the two first ones. Tonight I'll still focus on what we call the purification process through insight practice. Now, most of us come to meditation because of interest in mind development, no doubt. We want to develop the mind. Develop the mind means understanding the mind and learn about it. This is what it means in this context. It's not to make our minds more intelligent in the way that we're used to know more things. Right? It's important to understand that. So we establish this relationship to the changing world because it is constantly changing and we can see more than ever. It's amazing on what scale the world is changing. And we have this capacity due to our understanding to relate to it with more balance and certainly with more compassion. And that has an impact. And as I said, our practice doesn't only impact our own mind, but naturally it will impact our relationship with other beings, and it will impact the relationship with the world, because everything is interconnected. So that's really seeing the bigger picture. So we establish some basic awareness or mindfulness to see clearly. And I've talked about that last night, right? Knowing what's happening when it's happening. Now, what we can see is that our minds are very, for many of us, scattered and very restless. And I think that's due to our culture, quite frankly, everything that's asked from us, the daily way that we live and what's expected in so many domains just makes us grow in scatteredness and restlessness and agitation. That's probably why, actually, people wish to have a change in their relationship to themselves. And there's more and more now. It's amazing how many people, I mean, ordinary people, not hermits or, you know, people that are really interested in spirituality, that come to meditation just for well-being and have a healthy way of relating. Because it's true that if we allow it to go the way that it's going, running around all the time and you wonder why, the world is going to be going crazy. So there's a real need to ground ourselves in relationship. And that's one of the ways. It's not the only way, but it's a grounding aspect. And also, much more than that. Of course, there's a deeper meaning, you can say. Just the other evening on French television, there was the news. And you know, there's always a little documentary at the end of the news. And on that news, they were really talking about the effect and people now being the trend to have a slow attitude. So I thought, wow, this is really linked to mindfulness. You know, we have a slow attitude. And so to have, you know, there's already slow food and slow everything, which also has a way that we appreciating life. And they had a few people come on the screen there, and they were businessmen, people that were very involved in the world. And so, you know, there's hope. Probably there's hope. We're not the only ones, at least. And I think it's not a question of choice. It's a question of need, actually, where people really sense that there's a need. So we need the mindfulness, at least in this understanding, we need the mindfulness to learn to see clearly, deeply what is happening. Now, a lot of this work is understanding the thoughts and the emotions. And it's probably the most subtle aspect, actually, because it's so futile and it's so difficult to perceive. And yet it's so important that we begin to not only relate in relationship to being mindful to our body, but to be mindful in relationship to what is happening in the mind. Because one of the great, I feel, misfortunes, actually, of being a human being is how much we suffer being at the mercy of our minds. That we don't realize how much we suffer because of our incessant thoughts, emotions, paralyzing fears, obsessive desires, addictions, you know, all this chaos that's going inside is creating suffering. But one of the great blessings is that we are human beings. We're not animals, so we can really work and have a way to free ourselves from this suffering. And that's exactly why I'm so rejoiced at the meditation, because it has this perspective where a transformation is possible. And I'm completely full of trust when I say these words, for having experienced it over the years. So, how do we shift from being a misfortunate being to a blessed being? Well, it's learning how to relate to thoughts and to emotions. We create whole worlds and universes in our minds that most of the time don't apply to the reality, don't make any link and connection to what is happening in the reality. And that is quite amazing when you begin to see that that's what's happening. So you become interested. There's this wonderful example, and I'm sure you've heard it before, of an Chinese artist who's a fantastic artist, actually. And he paints a tiger on a wall, and he spends hours painting his tiger, right? And then he looks at his beautiful art piece, masterpiece, and he looks at it and he runs away because he believes that the tiger is real. He's scared. It's so real. He painted the tiger. It's amazing. This is exactly what happens. We create these stories and then we get afraid. Very fearful. There's a funny yogi story, which I'm going to take the time to say. Just a few weeks ago, I was teaching a retreat. I won't say where. But there was two friends that had rooms. They decided to have separate rooms, to not be too close to each other. So they had separate rooms, and one was very focused in her practice, and she was looking, you know, pretty serious, looking at her feet, not looking around. It's a good yogi. And so the other friend comes to me and she says, "Oh my goodness, I heard my friend during the night and she doesn't want to be my friend anymore and she hates me and it's awful." And I said, "Oh, did you hear that?" And she said, yes, I heard." And I said, "Well, you know, this is a specific space, So maybe you wait until the end of the retreat and you're assured. But that she was obsessed with this story. Can I write her a note? And I said, no, you don't write a note. You look in your mind. And so the end of the story is that the last day, the friend that was so serious ran up to her when it was the moment of breaking silence. She says, oh, I missed you so much. It's so nice to have you back. And this friend who had this whole story said, oh my gosh, this was such a learning. It was such an experience to go through all this turmoil in the mind. And she explained to her friend what the story was. And the beauty is, she says, it's like this all the time in my mind, in my life, thinking that people will abandon me and I can't be trustworthy of friends. And it was such an amazing experience for her that it was really an insight. Well, it's like this so much of our time. When we begin to open a little bit and be spacious to see, okay, what is happening? We are really constructing a world which doesn't resemble the reality. A lot of the time. I'm not saying all the time, but we create these mini universes over and over and over again. The movies of our mind. And so it's so important to know that it's a movie. So this is why we have to understand that thoughts themselves are not the problem. You see, if you want to get rid of the thoughts in a meditation retreat, and you can do that with concentration, hoops, out of the door, stay fixed on the breath, and only breath. You come out of that retreat, you didn't understand anything about the working of the mind. So you go back and you say, okay, meditation, just to come back. You come back and you're calm for, you know, you try to be calm because it's not always that it works that you're going to be staying with the breath, right? But then you come out and what did you learn about your mind? Not much. So it's not in the Vipassana meditation to get rid of the thoughts because we want to learn about these thoughts. We want to learn how they function. We want to learn the relationship that we're establishing. And anyway, it's pretty hard to do because when we are going to be back in our lives, even though we're distracted, we don't notice them anymore. But we do act from that space, which means we act in fear. We act from that space of maybe worry, anxiety, agitation, restlessness, and therefore we try to push ourselves away. But it's so much more valid and useful to relate in a way that we have sanity and health in relationship to this world of thoughts. And I was just the same. I remember my very first retreat with Saida Upandita. Just imagine. It was a month-long retreat with very strict Burmese Sayadaw, extremely demanding, but it was very good for me, actually. I needed the some harsh way to begin. And so, you know, very fresh, very sweet, young, 20s, and I was complaining about the thoughts. And he looked at me with this fierce look and he said, you're not here to make your mind quiet. You're here to understand your mind and see how it creates your suffering. And that was it. That was the end of the interview. You know, he didn't say how. And I left that interview room and I thought, oh my goodness, there's work to do here. But I trusted the teacher, which was great. So I said, okay, let's begin to look. And in the same way, I'm saying, okay, this is where you really need to begin. Let's look. What is the problem? So thoughts are not the problem. You see, we think the thoughts are the problem. Thoughts are not the problem. That's the first thing to remember. This is a quote from Bhante Gunaratana. He says, "Somewhere in this process, you will come face to face with the sudden, shocking realization that you are completely crazy. Your mind is a shrieking, gibbering madhouse on wheels, barreling pell-mell down the hill, utterly out of control and hopeless. No problem. You are not crazier than you were yesterday. It has always been this way, but you never noticed. Now, at least, you know it." So it's fascinating because it's not about not being. So how do we relate? What do we do? We don't need to give ourselves a hard time. And that's very interesting because when we integrate the fact that meditation is not thinking about things, which we also say, right? We do say to you, meditation is not thinking. If you spend your whole time thinking on your cushion, you're not meditating, which is true. So, it's not about figuring out, it's not about analyzing. So what do? Not get rid of the thoughts, but not think. What's the relationship that we can establish? Well, it's a very new relationship, actually. One that we're not used to at all. And that relationship is to have the direct experience of the awareness of thoughts, which I mentioned briefly this morning. And that's from the place of awareness, from the place of attention, from the bigger picture, from the side of process within which there is awareness and awareness of different events amongst which thoughts are manifesting. Right? And the capacity to be knowing a thought is as clear in this bigger picture from that place of attention as knowing a breath or knowing a bodily sensation. So that is a new relationship, for sure. But it's not one where we're trying hard to get rid of them, to be able to breathe. So we learn to not get so caught in thoughts and not push them away. Not get caught in thoughts, not push them away. There's an in-between. There's a third option. And that's the third option that is called the meditation. Getting caught in thought means that we are involved in the content. Right? Involved in the story. Right? Making up a story, right? A thought plus another thought plus another thought, which is called papancha in Pali, is just an proliferation of thoughts. That's the story. And so when we say creating mini universes is we create as many stories as we like. But they're all born out of one thought plus one thought plus one thought. And that's the story. And then we believe the story we are creating. It's fantastic when we begin from that place of awareness to notice, oh, wow, this is a construct. It's a mental construct. So we live in the mental construct. We live in that space. So it's not so easy to step out of that living space, right? And have a quality of awareness which enables me to see, this is thought. This is a story. But this is what is happening in our meditation. It's like when you are in a room, and in a room, because of habit, we see people, right? Constant. We see form, color. We look at the things in the room, right? Do you ever look at the space in the room? Not so much. Right? We don't pay attention so much to the space. Well, it's a little bit like that. So if we have the bigger picture, then we also have a possibility of stepping back and we see space, as well as people, right? So we see thoughts, but we see also the environment, which is bigger than just thought. So that's kind of moving from the content to the process of thought. And it's huge. And yet, we're allowing thinking to be present. Because the other side is getting rid of the thought, really having some aversion and pushing away. So we are interested in the process, which means that we don't give them too much credit that we believe in them, and we don't have aversion to them that we need to get rid of them. Okay? So that's the mindfulness of thought. And you can try that as in a little while. You'll see the experience when you'll be meditating again. And yet, we don't follow them. Because if we follow them, we create another story. So in our everyday life, we're just not paying attention in that way. We're just so caught into our stories and our distractions that we spend our life thinking. And it's a habit. And so what we are doing here is we're just changing habits. It's a deconditioning. That's all there is. And I think thoughts are not a problem. And in a way, trying to get rid of them, for what I've seen and what I've told someone today, is reinforcing them. The more you want them out, the more they're going to come in. It's just because there's a fueling of the aversion to them that creates even a bigger reactivity. So we notice them and we let them go. We notice them, we let them go. That is it. And in that way, we really begin to understand their nature. What we see is that they don't have a lot of substance, quite frankly. In the teachings, the thoughts are said to be like bubbles in a stream. Or the analogy also is like a rainbow. It's an appearance. It's really an appearance. Or a snowflake. They don't have any materiality. And we can, when we really begin to have a contact and a connection in our practice where there's a sense of intimacy, so many people already at the beginning say, oh, there was a thought, but I can't look at the thoughts. They're gone. The moment I want to look at them and really investigate, they're gone. Yes, because most of them, what are they? They are ephemeral. They don't have a lot of substance. So if they go, don't try to hold on to them. Just allow them to be coming and going. I'd like to read something from Tenzin Palmo. She says, when we rush in with this mental chatter, we are no longer being mindful. We're just thinking about being mindful. Mindfulness is not thinking about. It is being present and actually knowing the moment as it is without any mental commentary. When commentary begins to happen, we simply notice it. and be present for it. There are so many things that happen in our life that we never really experience. We experience only ideas, interpretations, and comparisons. We dwell on things that happened in the past or anticipate the future events, but we almost never experience the moment itself. It is for this reason that we so often find our lives so boring, so meaningless. What we need to realize is that this sense of boredom or meaninglessness doesn't come from our lives, but from the quality of awareness with which we live our lives. So there's really a reinforcement of living our lives, being in touch with what is present. Mark Twain has this wonderful line. He says, "My life has been filled with terrible misfortunes, most of which never happened." That's exactly what many of us would say. And, you know, he was an old man, a very wise man. So we don't want to get hijacked by our thoughts. And a lot of this particular meditation practice is learning about not being hijacked. But we need to have an interest. If we're just there, dull, and not really putting in some investigation and some interest and some contact, this type of exploration is just not going to happen. So we invite, in a way, the investigation. When there's a settledness of mind, just to be able to really break these patterns. The patterns are so strong that we're here to do this type of work. And so it helps us become more aware, and more often aware is enough. The magical aspect is just 1 second we're aware, the next we're lost. But the next one we can be aware again. And so this is the whole difference. Lost, suffering. Not lost, no suffering. Because it's the awareness that takes the lead and not the thoughts, not the patterns. And each time we're doing this, we're cutting the cycle of suffering. So it's quite amazing. It's not liberation in 2,000 years or maybe not 2,000, but 10 years. It's momentary. It's now. This moment of liberation has an impact. It's now. It's this moment. Can you imagine the effect? So Sayadaw Utegunye says this: when the mind is thinking or wandering, just be aware of it. Thinking is a natural activity of the mind. You are doing well if you are aware that the mind is thinking. But if you feel disturbed by your thoughts, or if you have a reaction or judgment of them, there is a problem with your attitude. The wandering mind is not the problem. Your attitude that they should not be around is the problem, which is the reactivity, right, that I was talking about. So understand that you have just become aware of some functions of the mind. These two are just objects of your attention. When you feel disturbed by thinking, remind yourself that you are not practicing to prevent thinking, but rather to recognize and acknowledge thinking whenever it arises. If you are not aware, you cannot know that you are thinking. The fact that you recognize that you are thinking means that you are aware. Remember that it does not matter how many times the mind thinks, wanders off, or gets annoyed about something, as long as you become aware of it. So for some of us, it may be a very different way of hearing the teachings than what we've been used to. It's definitely maybe another attitude. But to me, being a teacher and having had a lot of different teachings, this makes a lot of sense, actually. It makes a huge sense, just because of what I said before, that we're not trying to get rid of anything. And yet we're not, when we're able to notice and to be in relationship with what is and not be governed by it, and that we don't need to be in reactivity, this is when we're going to be free. That's all. Whatever the experience. And it's going to be exactly the same with emotions. So we remember that this is just a thought story. We don't have to get entangled into it. Now he does say a second important thing. He says, it is essential to learn to watch thinking without getting involved. When a thought keeps growing, no matter how much effort you put into trying to simply be with it, you are probably somehow involved in the thought. When this happens, when thinking becomes so incessant that you can no longer observe it, stop looking at the thoughts and try to notice the underlying feelings, emotions, or bodily sensations instead. So many of us have recurrent thoughts, right? Or we can say obsessive patterns, something which has a lot more weight, you can say, than the just normal random thinking that is manifesting. In those moments, there's no doubt that there is an emotion that may be lying underneath. And this is where we need to place the attention. Noticing if there is an emotion or feeling. Not the feeling tone that I was talking about yesterday, right? Emotion. Then we really need to notice that we don't stay interested in the relationship, mindful in the relationship, just the thoughts. We leave that realm to investigate and inquire if there's something called emotional state that is present. And to be able to do this, we usually leave the mental space and inquire into the body. Because it's in the body, clearly, that we'll have a sense of greater connection to the emotional state. What are emotions? They're a constellation of thoughts and bodily sensations. There's a real sense of being a constellation, which naturally is coming to be seen. So when we deal with emotions, usually, we either drown in them, and we're completely overwhelmed. Therefore, we're again lost in the content of the emotion. Or we stay at a distance and we try to avoid them no matter what. So here, the consequences are important. When we drown, we get lost, and of course we suffer. Unnecessarily. When we avoid, there's aversion, restlessness, and agitation. That's when we bring in distractions. So if you have a lot of ways that you want out, and distractions are some of them, we realize maybe there's something underneath there that may be present, which I may not be ready to meet. That's possible. But at least to know it. That we begin to know, okay, there's something here which calls for my attention, and there may be some resistance, and I'm just aware of the resistance, however it is that it's manifesting. It may manifest as distraction, like a lot of storytelling. Our imagination can be very fertile in those moments. And it can also manifest as sleepiness or numbness, like very neutral and going into passivity, resignation, indifference. That's also very common resistance when something underneath is here, but we're just not ready for it. And it's important to respect those resistances if they're here. It's part of the process, right? Slowly, slowly, it's going to change, but we are in a way asking ourselves to work at the level where there's a possibility to work. And this is why it's so organic and beautiful work, actually. Maybe it's not going as fast as we would like it to be going, but there's at least a sense where it's always organic and a natural process of opening, because we're the one doing the work, and maybe it's one step forward and two steps back, one step forward, two steps back, right? And it's the process. So we don't fall into something which we cannot meet usually. So this way of drowning or avoiding are the two ways that we will have suffering happen. The third is mindful awareness. That's the third option, exactly in the same way with the thoughts. So making friends with the emotions and learning to understand their nature. Now we learn with the emotions to work with them in a very balanced way, and when they're really strong, it's very good to bring in some metta practice, just because the kindness and the gentleness, the softness allows us to stay present rather than resist. That's kind of the nutriment, you can say, or the nourishment to be able to stay connected rather than not. And how do we do this? We're mindful of that emotion. You know, it's thoughts, bodily sensations. How do they arise? How do they pass? And we become interested in the emotion itself. So it's not really a problem to feel them. Here again, we understand that the idea about the emotion, the story that I'm telling myself, is often much more fearful than touching it. Once we're ready to touch it, and it's fascinating to notice this, I know in my own practice, all these terrifying stories about, you know, meeting the fear, for example. And once it just happens that you're ready to meet the fear, meeting the fear, had I known, I wouldn't have created all these whirlwinds of resistances, walls sometimes, barriers to not face that fear. And the reality is often not what we think it is. Again, the story. So it's important to have a sense that when we are present with the emotion, to notice also what is the story that I'm manifesting or creating around the emotion, or about the emotion, whatever it is. It may be anger, it may be fear, it may be a lot of sadness, whatever it is. So there's a sense that we're leading ourselves to a sense of completeness. This attitude is very healing. It's liberating, but along the way, we're really noticing such a healing attitude, where we're not driven by our wounds, but much more by a healthy sense of relationship. So it's said that mindfulness is a healing power, actually, as well as metta, because of the contributing factor of being able to accept and open and allow rather than reject. That's the big difference, actually. And so therefore, it's healing. So this is what we do. We make friends with mindfulness and metta. What happens is that there's an increase in tolerance. If we've been present, mindful just once, we'll notice that it's possible to do that once more and once more. And so the experience nourishes us and drives us in a much more wholesome direction than the one that we've been using out of habit. And one very famous line of the Buddha is, we nourish and we consciously are aware and, how does that phrase go? No. What we most focus upon is what will be the driving force of nourishment. Meaning that if we focus upon anger a lot, then this is going to be the habit of the mind, to be often angry, right? If we focus on awareness or mindfulness a lot, then this is going to be the drive of the mind, to be a mindful person or a friendly person. So what we focus on becomes the habit of the mind. So can you imagine the power that we have in relationship to the working of the mind and where we want to go? We have a very clear choice. And so here we are giving ourselves a huge potential for giving powerful and healing forces in our mind every moment that we're mindful. It's absolutely wonderful, actually. So I'll end with Rilke. He says, make an exploration in kindness. Before I quote him, it's very important to just remember that if we do this exploration with aversion, just exactly what I said, then we only increase the aversion and we will increase the suffering. So there are times when it's very important to really allow yourself to recognize the aversion, and in those times, back off. Do you understand the term back off? Yeah? Leave. Leave doesn't mean go and space out. Leave means coming back to the anchor, find a place of balance, means stop working with that issue, you can say. Just, we know and we learn intuitively, actually, when to back off. And that's exactly part of the process of knowing how to deal wisely. And so this is exactly what Rilke says. He says, have patience with everything unresolved in your heart and try to love the questions themselves as if they were locked rooms or books written in a very foreign language. Don't search for the answers which could not be given to you now, because you would not be able to live them. And the point is to live everything. Live the questions now. Perhaps then, someday, far in the future, you will gradually, without even noticing it, live your way into the answer. It's a wonderful quote in relationship to the way that we're doing the practice. Because we're not figuring it out. We're not knowing exactly what's happening at each step. Suddenly we realize, oh yeah, there's an answer here to the question that I had so long ago. So it's not important to intellectually understand each step that is manifesting. And this quote is exactly what we are doing in the practice. We live the questions, meaning that we live in not knowing. And that's quite amazing, actually, because slowly, slowly, it's the awareness that's driving us into the answers. So the trust is not needing to be trusting ourselves. It's the trust in awareness that grows and then gives us the way into the answers. What happens with this is that we begin to really have much less fear of our lives, much less fear of other beings. There's so much more openness and joy of living. It's light rather than being such a huge burden. And so, of course, this is conducive to practice. It's out of this experience of living ourselves in the moment. We can't think about this. And we can't have another being do the work for us. It's one of these things that still today one needs to do for ourselves. Maybe one day, who knows? But I think that would be a shame, quite frankly. So to be free of your obsessions or mind stories, connect. There's a very natural sense of spaciousness that comes along the way. And joy. Even though we're very serious, joy is the outcome, lightness of heart. Okay, so I spoke a little longer. It's fine. We'll take our half hour. Yeah, we've been here since 7, so it's quite a long time, and it's not so late. So we'll come back for 9 o'clock and have a last short end of evening together.